We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, calling out to be this hero. I get that. But here's what I'd ask, and I wonder what Rosa Parks would have done if I said, here, Rosa, if someone said, here's $100 million, here's $50 million for you to sit in the back of the bus and not say anything. Okay, Martin Luther King, before you start this campaign, here's $35 million. What would they do then? Because when you look at it as a backup and what he could have made, I think it's about $35 million. I believe that what Colin could have gotten is future earnings. That's my number.
That's the point. Okay.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
Not my number. It's not no $25 million a year. It's not, it's not $15 million
a year.
Well,
we know how you are with paying quarterbacks. You wanted to give Garoppolo $400,000.
I did. So that's why I'm saying $35 million as a backup and what he could have played for the next 5, 6, 7 years.
Very reasonable.
That's a number. So how would you have looked? And then I hear people talking about, voting and all those different things. Here, I voted Obama, I voted Clinton, I voted against Obama, I voted for Obama. So one time I voted for him, one I didn't. Here's people you have to realize. People say, okay, if there are certain things, especially when it comes to Christians and all these different deals, they vote for Democrat and all these certain things, and here's abortion side, here's this. So we pick what we want, and then we justify what we want. So I'm going to go this much, but both of them I don't agree with. But so I don't understand how people just come and say they want to, speak hatred and vitriol when here's some things that you don't believe in, but you still vote this way. Here's some things that you believe in, but you vote that way. It's just weird to me how people just want to say, no, it's either black or white. And that's not the case.
Between Trump, Obama, voting, abortion, everything you have mentioned today, you are animal abuse away from hitting for the cycle. Just mentioning literally every hot button issue out there.
It's out there.
It's because I'm listening. I'm listening to everything you're saying.
Thank you.
And that is what we are doing right now. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, a radio.com station. Good morning. You, if you're just joining us, are in the middle of an exercise. Colin Kaepernick, the billboard for Nike, went up in Union Square, I believe yesterday, or at least it made news yesterday. He is the face of Nike's 30th anniversary Just Do It campaign. This naturally has become a hot button issue. Not just because Nike's chosen to go with Kaepernick or because Kaepernick is back in the limelight, but because it has now provided a forum for every side who's upset with something to voice their opinion regarding what they're upset with. Sometimes it never even has anything to do with Nike or Colin Kaepernick. It's just now an open forum. We are trying to prove something. We are trying to prove that over the course of a 1 hour segment, we can discuss this. We can bring the callers into this. We can hit on both sides of the aisle. And we can do it while listening to each other. We can do it in a respectful manner. We can do it without screaming at one another, because that's where we need to get to if we're going to make any progress whatsoever. Like I said a little while ago, the first stage of learning is silence. The second stage of learning is listening. So we've got a few minutes to go here, but we will open it back up to the phones. Chris and Tracy, thank you for holding. The floor is yours. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Basically, what I just wanted to say is, it is always so interesting to me because people get so upset about this topic about Colin Kaepernick. And I've literally seen a line divided in my social media, my friends on, where people stand. And I think if you strip away, the platform on which he chose to do it and how he's doing it, and you literally just look at what his goal is to help people. And I'm not saying that I agree with how he does it, or that I disagree, but the fact of the matter is he's trying to help people. And are people really going to get angry and upset because he's trying to help people? I mean, if that is the case, then those people have bigger problems in their own lives that they need to work out, because when it boils down to it, he's just trying to help people, and I'm always for helping people. My other point is, touching back on the whole social media thing, we're all yelling at each other, trying to change each other's minds and perspectives and trying to get people to see things. when to me, that's always been the wrong way to go about it. To me, if you want change, it has to start in your own home. You change your own perception. You become a little bit more wise in the sense where you're going to just be able to listen more. And not just listen, but listen to hear someone, not listen to respond. Teach your kids, hey, you know what? It's okay to have an open mind. It's okay to have a difference of opinion. But how you choose to raise your children and to go about things in your own home is going to make changes in the entire world, honestly. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the phone call, Chris. Thank you for weighing in. He made a point in there about the idea of people shouting at each other because they're trying to get that person to change their opinion. I don't think that's what it is. I think it's actually so much more primitive than that. We're just shouting at each other now to try to prove that we're right and they're wrong. It's not even about one side trying to convince the other side to change their opinion. It's about one side telling the other side, you are wrong. I am right. Listen to me. I'm screaming because I need to be heard. That's unfortunately where we are. And this speaks to all parties. I'm guilty of this on virtually every topic I get involved in. Very difficult for me to have civil discourse with anyone about anything.
Yeah, and it's a challenge for all of us. I think it becomes heightened by the fact that we all live on social media now. So if somebody puts a Facebook post out there about politics, inevitably you're going to see 70 comments, people going back and forth, all caps. It's on Twitter and the TV news shows that I'm watching more of now as I become a global news correspondent in the greater part of New Zealand.
Are you doing more than just New Zealand, Australia?
Doing New Zealand, Australia right now, trying to expand to further out on the rim. But the point being, I'm watching a lot of these shows now, and you can pick whatever network you want. They always bring the other side on, and it's like, coming up, you know, we get into it, and it turns into just the two people yelling at each other while the moderator in the middle sits there and shakes his or her head as if to say, this is bad TV, guys. This is bad TV. It's awful. It's awful.
But people aren't interested in discourse.
No.
Although it's coming back in podcast form. I think you're starting to notice that there are podcasts that are starting to surge up the charts that have people simply talking about issues. Bill Simmons is brilliant at this. Now, I know people have listened to Bill Simmons with Kevin Durant recently and with Steph, and you can find little tidbits in there such as, this means he's going there. It's all sports talk. That's fine. But Simmons is a master conversationalist because even when he's broaching the subject of something aggressive or polarizing, he's able to do it in a very disarming manner. Whereas it doesn't feel like he's being aggressive with you, and therefore it gets the interview subject to open up a little bit. That would work a lot better on TV, but for some reason it doesn't feel as if that's what rates. We've gotten so caught up in looking at ratings and bottom lines that we really don't look at whether or not we're proud of the product. There are still companies out there that would rather make a little bit less in order to be prouder of what they're producing than find themselves in a situation where, I might not necessarily believe with what we're doing, but hell, the ratings are through the roof and we're all getting paid and I got a bonus check coming to me at the end of the year.
Too often it's that short form, yeah. Though. Like the TV magazine, it's a 5-minute thing. If you have a podcast, you can do an hour, you can do 5 hours and have it be civil and really take your time and elucidate the issues and go through them one by one. When you have that short form stuff, a lot of times it's just rip and run.
Joe Rogan's perfect at this. Joe Rogan takes so much heat because of the people he has on his podcast. Jordan Peterson's a perfect example. Now, I won't necessarily get into who Jordan Peterson is, but he wrote a book, 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. There are people who love that book, and there are people who hate that book. And that book has put Jordan Peterson at the top of the bestseller list, and it's got him on speaking engagements all around the world. He has a message that often gets confused. And because it gets confused, people yell and scream. So Rogan's had him on the podcast a couple times. Simply for having him on the podcast, Rogan gets attacked like you wouldn't believe. Now, these are people that don't even listen to the podcast, and they might not even understand what Jordan Peterson's message is. But the fact that they don't like him for one reason or another, and because Joe Rogan is willing to have a conversation with him, Joe Rogan is now being attacked for talking to this individual. That's the problem right there. It's the, I'm going to read the headline and then I'm going to jump into the comment section. Read the article. Go through the article, then go to the comment section. Don't look at the headline, make an assumption, and then jump to the comments to start fighting with anyone. No one's going to win in that scenario. Colin Kaepernick and Joe Rogan, that's where he should go, because at some point he's going to need to have a public conversation to start to address these things. And I'm sure Nike's spoken to him about that. Rogan would be the perfect spot. Rogan's the type of guy that can help present it on both ends of the equation. He's going to sit there and he's going to have a conversation with you. And he's going to challenge you, but he's not going to scream at you. He's not going to yell at you. That would be the perfect forum. You don't need to go on Fox News or CNN. That's going to all be for their gain. Joe will benefit from it, but he got in the podcast game before it was even making money. It was like him and Adam Carolla doing this thing. Right. No one even knew how it worked or how it existed. And now he's got this monster forum, but he's an excellent conversationalist. That would be the platform for Kaepernick to have a conversation with someone that millions of people would be able to listen to.
And that's what needs to happen, I think, in my opinion, for him to get to that next level, because there are still people who confuse what Colin Kaepernick's message is and also are holding on to things rightfully, like the pig socks, the Castro shirt. These are things that you can't get beyond. And what his girlfriend tweeted out, the picture of the owner of the Ravens and of Ray Rice in Django Unchained.
Ray Lewis.
Oh, Ray Lewis is who it was.
I believe so, yeah.
And that's the kind of thing you need to answer for, because that turns a lot of people off, people who want to be a part of what he's trying to do, but they can't get beyond it, Love.
I totally agree. Those are things that you do have to address sooner than later. And Colin should, you know, if he had the right people would just come out and you just say, you know what, that wasn't the best. You know what, I had some resentment. I had on socks. I shouldn't have did that. That's a bad look. It showed when my heart. My heart was in the wrong place. Because I had a prejudice toward officers, and it's wrong. That's not how I want to portray officers. I've had people in office and family members in military. I think that he should clean up that. You know, you do have to answer for that. And what you do starting something and how you finish is two different things. So I think there's a lot of dibs, like you alluded to. A lot of people would love to get behind this movement. A lot of people would love to get behind Colin Kaepernick because of the things that he's done and seem like he hasn't been remorseful for him. You're creating racism on another side. So you got to be careful when you start any type of movement, because you got to understand this is a very, very sensitive issue. You got to have fair and balance on both sides.
And just like that, we have completed one consecutive hour of commercial-free discourse for you, the beautiful and intelligent listening audience. We'll attack each other next. We're going to bring Kurt Warner on. We're going to set him up, make him feel good, and then we're going to bring him down to earth, because now it's time to get back to what we really do around here on Joe Lowe at the 95.7 The Game.
Need help getting out of bed in the morning? We've got the answer. The Pregame Show. Come on! Every weekday morning at 5 a.m., leading you into Joe, Low, and Dibs at 6. Don't miss the Pregame Show on the Bay Area's football station, 95.7. The Game. Joe, Low, and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
We're back. Your boys, Joe, Low, and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. You'll hear from 49ers fullback Kyle Juszczyk at 8:45. But right now, we are very happy to welcome on our next guest. He is a Hall of Famer, a Super Bowl champion, a two-time NFL MVP. The resume goes on all day long. But he's also an analyst for Westwood One and the NFL Network. Ladies and gentlemen, Kurt Warner joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Good morning, Kurt. And as always, thank you for your time. Sorry for butchering your name. I had half a donut before I introduced you.
It's quite all right. No worries at all. But I'm excited. Always good to be on, and excited that it's week one. Let's play some football.
All right. So you're going to be calling the second half of the Monday night doubleheader for Westwood One. It's going to be Raiders and Rams. Now, you've been going through your prep. Tell us what you see.
Well, I tell you what. I mean, you look at the Rams, and you know, on paper, I think a lot of people would say this team has a chance to be in the Super Bowl. I mean, you go out and buy, you know, Peters and Tlaib and Sue, and then you get your guy Aaron Donald back. And, I mean, you got all these pieces on defense coupled with an offense, you know, led by Todd Gurley and Jared Goff, who had a breakout year in year two, and Sean McVay in that offense. I mean, just on paper, yeah, I'm just excited to see this team. The interesting thing is, none of their guys played in preseason, you know, so are they going to come out firing? Are they going to come out, you know, sharp? Is it going to be a rough start because they didn't get time in preseason, especially some of these young guys, a young quarterback? But I just think they have the makings of being a team that's very, very competitive every week and has a chance, again, on paper, to compete in the NFC with anybody.
What's that like for a player who doesn't get much preseason time or doesn't get any at all? Is it an ability to come out and really be firing from the first quarter, or should we expect that this Ram offense takes maybe a quarter or a half to really get revved up?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I played, no matter how many years I was in the league, I always wanted to play in preseason. And I didn't know how much I wanted to play because, you know, low knows, you don't want to play a lot, but you want to play enough that it clicks in your mind, okay, I'm ready.
Sure.
Okay, I can slow the game down. I'm seeing everything. I feel comfortable because, you know, that was a crazy thing, and I don't know if all players had this, but every time I went into the off season and we went back to start training camp, I always had this question in my mind, will I be the same guy I was last year? You know, will I be able to do all the same things I could do last year? You know, feel the pressure and move in the pocket and make the decisions. So I needed some time, whatever amount of time that was, for me to go, okay, I'm ready. And maybe it was one series in the first preseason game. Maybe it wasn't until I came out of halftime in the third preseason game. But I needed to feel ready. And so I'm really interested to see some of these young quarterbacks that haven't played a lot of football. Can they come out and just pick up where they left off after no preseason time, you know, when they haven't played a lot of football at this level?
Kurt, what do you do with a guy like Carr, who had a year removed from having a MVP type of year, and then last year kind of the setback? If you're Gruden, you're Carr, what is it? What is the mindset going into this game, especially against the Rams? What does this Raider team need to do to shock people?
Well, I tell you what, if I look back at this Raiders team over the last couple of years, I see a very stagnant, boring offense that didn't make it easy on Derek Carr at all. 2 years ago, when you talked about he had his great year, they still threw a lot of one-on-one go routes on the outside. It just so happened that Cooper and Crabtree and company made those plays that year. So they won a lot of close games because they made a lot of plays with Derek Carr's big arm and the playmakers on the outside. Last year, tried to do the same thing. Well, what you know is that certain plays are low percentage plays. They made those, you know, low percentage plays 2 years ago. They didn't make them last year, and that was the difference in what they were offensively. I believe John Gruden comes in and makes the game easier for Derek Carr, that he's going to make easier throws. He's going to create concepts that are going to make easier decisions and create opportunities for guys to get open that they didn't necessarily have the last couple years. Now, I know John Gruden's been out of the game for 10 years, so to speak, from a coaching standpoint, but I believe he was involved in the game. He's always thinking. He's a guy that's always trying to create and always wants to know the next and the latest and greatest thing. So I believe he's going to apply that for Derek Carr this year, and you're going to see an easier offense for Derek Carr. Does that mean more wins? Not necessarily, but I think, you know, playing quarterback is going to be easier for Derek Carr this year than it's been probably at any point in time in his career.
Kurt Warner joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Khalil Mack traded from the Raiders to the Bears on Saturday. How surprising was that move to you, given Mack's durability, his locker room character, and his production?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think if you just look at the player himself, I think everybody's shocked. I mean, you don't give away your best player, and I don't want to say give away, but you don't trade your best player that, as you said, is a great locker room guy, is a great leader, and a great player, and a young guy. You don't just do that. So if you just look at the player and where the team is, you know, you're up in arms and you're a Raiders fan and going, oh my gosh, how in the world could we possibly do this? To me, when I see a move like that, that's an organization saying to me, we don't believe we're that close to winning a championship. We believe we're a number of pieces away from getting there, and paying, you know, $140 million to our best defense player, along with that much money to our quarterback, is really going to tie us down to maybe not build this team and get the pieces we need to be a championship-type team. If you felt you were already a championship-type team and you had those pieces, a la the Los Angeles Rams, you sign your guy and you go to work and you say, we're going to win a championship this year. I believe the Raiders were basically saying, we're not there. And so we can not tie up $90 million in one guy. We can get two more draft picks, add it to Derek Carr, and build this thing the right way. And we believe we can be a competitive team 2, 3, 4 years down the road. instead of tying all that money up into a couple guys and not have enough pieces to really, you know, utilize those guys and their skills to the utmost. And so I see both sides of this thing, and it's never easy for a team or a teammate to lose one of their best players that you feel can help you win a championship, and a fan base to lose one of, you know, the faces of your franchise. But at the same time, the organization always has to be looking and saying, okay, this isn't about two players. This is about an organization and winning championships. What do we need to do? If it's sign Khalil Mack, we sign Khalil Mack. If it's let him go and get more pieces to help us, then that's what you have to do, even if it's the unpopular decision.
It's just interesting because Chicago has a different, I guess, thought process, because they don't necessarily have the, you know, the talent as well, but they see a transitional player, a player that you just don't, it doesn't come around often to let leave the building. So I totally understand.
And Lo, I think that, you know, the interesting thing there is you say maybe not ready now, but here's a defense that was a top 10 defense in scoring and yards last year. Now you got Roquan Smith as your number one pick. You add him at the linebacker spot. You put Khalil Mack there as a pass rusher. Okay, now what does that do to this already really good defense?
Sure.
Maybe that moves you to the top five. Offensively, you know you've got a young quarterback that you've got a number of years left before you have to pay him. You've got a young back that's really good. You believe your skilled players are better than they've been in the past. So now you've solidified a defense where you think this can be a top defense. You've got your young pieces. Now if you can just add one or two more guys offensively, now I think Chicago's starting to go, man, we got a lot of pieces to be competitive in the North and be competitive in the NFC, even though a couple of our pieces are very young right now. If they come along like we think they can, now we've set ourselves up to be competitive in this division for a number of years.
How is it, do you believe that Gruden's offensive philosophy, because you look at their offensive line, is one of the highest paid offensive lines in football. You paid your quarterback, and hopefully, you know, the outside receiver is going to get paid. But if you think about that, I'm just trying to get the philosophy of what Gruden's doing. The time he won the Super Bowl, he didn't necessarily win it with offense. You know, when he won it with Sapp and those guys, it was kind of defensive. Do you think now he's just saying, okay, how do we just ride the ship until we get the pieces? Or do you think this offense still can be pretty deadly because of the offensive weapons and the offensive line that they have?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they have to be thinking right now is, you know, we're going to have to outscore people. We're, you know, we're going to have to bank on Derek Carr and Amari Cooper and the two backs in the backfield and that offensive line to carry us, because, you know, we've seen even with Khalil Mack, we weren't very good defensively. You know, we weren't a game-changing defense. And so we need a bunch of pieces over there. So, yeah, I think that's got to be their approach early on, is we got to win with offense right now. And then when we get a chance to add pieces, we got to add pieces on defense. And I think they may subtract some more low as well. You know, that you may see some of those offensive linemen that are higher paid be casualties here this offseason to really try to build this the right way and feel like they can get a number of really good pieces as opposed to just a couple great players. You know, they've got a number of pieces that they have to add. And so I think there's going to be more addition by subtraction once we hit this offseason and John Gruden really gets into the mix of things and starts shaping things the way he feels a championship team needs to be shaped.
And four first-round picks over the course of the next 2 years as a result of this trade. Even now, looking at what the Raiders have done with Khalil Mack, do you still see them having an ability to stay in an AFC West that looks a little bit more competitive now with the Chargers having suffered so many injuries?
I think that, you know, division is still up for grabs. You know, you look at Kansas City, and there's a playoff team from last year, but their defense wasn't real strong. You know, it was kind of some smoke and mirrors from that standpoint. So you got a young quarterback there. What's he going to be? We know how talented he is, but how good are they going to be? So there's a lot of questions there. Denver, again, you know, was a team that struggled. Case Keenum has one great year, and you pay him a bunch of money. Is he going to be that same guy in Denver that he was in Minnesota? You know, so this team was a little bit down, only won five games last year, but you look at them piece-wise and go, I think they're more talented than a five-win team. If they get good play at quarterback, they could compete. As you said, the Chargers, I believe, you know, are one of the most talented teams in the league. I mean, you look at what they did last year, you know, the best record of a team that didn't make the playoffs, best scoring defense of a team that didn't make the playoffs. I mean, 17 points a game, you know, an offense led by a Hall of Fame type quarterback, one of the best receivers in the league, and a really good young running back. Last 12 games, they were 9-3. They just have to start a little bit faster. I think they're the team to beat in the division, in my opinion. But as you said, there's questions with all of these teams. And so to think that any one of them, including the Raiders, couldn't be competitive and compete for this division while they all kind of beat each other up and figure out who they are, I think is crazy. I think everybody has a chance. Like I said, I put the Chargers at the top. I probably put Denver right below them. I probably put the Chiefs next and then Oakland last. But, you know, Oakland still's got a lot of playmakers. And if they can show up and play good football offensively with those playmakers, I think they can beat anybody in that division and definitely compete for it.
Kurt, naturally, Niner fans are very excited based on the way they saw last season conclude, with Jimmy Garoppolo stepping in, playing a capable brand of quarterback, and engineering five consecutive victories. But what would be reasonable expectations for this squad this year, given A, the injury to Jerick McKinnon, and B, the schedule they'll face?
You know, I mean, I think, you know, tempered expectations would be 8-9 wins. You know, to think where they were last year, you know, Pierre Garçon coming back, Goodwin kind of coming into his own a little bit. Yeah, McKinnon, I think, is going to hurt because they were trying to build around him. So now what do they get at the back position? And especially, you know, McKinnon was kind of a specialist that could, you know, run and catch out of the backfield. I'm not sure the guys they have now, you know, following them can be that dynamic. So how does that change the way their offense looks? You know, Richard Sherman on defense, you know, we've got some good young pieces on defense. Can they take that step up? But again, you're talking, you know, in the West, the Rams, Seattle is always tough there. Russell Wilson's always going to make them competitive, even though they're going to look a little bit different. Arizona, a lot of playmakers there, you know, even though a lot of people question who they're going to be. I mean, their defense in the preseason had, you know, 16, 17 turnovers. It was ridiculous. Chandler Jones, Patrick Peterson, you know, David Johnson, Sam Bradford, if he's healthy, Larry Fitzgerald. It's a tough division. I think every game you play in that division is going to be competitive across the board. And so, you know, I don't know if I expect them to make that huge jump and make the playoffs this year, but I do expect them to be better. And I think 8 wins, 9 wins is definitely reasonable if Jimmy Garoppolo gets a little more help than he had last year, because I believe he's going to play really good football. I believe he's one of the up-and-coming stars at the quarterback position, can do it all. I don't think what we've seen to this point is a fluke. You know, it may not always be that good. You know, he's not always going to be undefeated, but I think he's a really, really good quarterback. It's got a huge upside, and with help around him, I think they're going to be very competitive.
Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champion, 2-time NFL MVP, and you can check him out now on the NFL Network and at Westwood One. He'll be on the call for the Raiders-Rams game Monday night. It's Kurt Warner with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Kurt, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
You bet. Look forward to catching up a few weeks down the road. Take care, guys.
What a guy. Just what a guy. So gregarious with his time.
Son of the earth.
Is he, you know him personally.
Oh, yes.
Is he behind the scenes what he appears to be in the public light?
Even nicer.
Even nicer.
The guy is unbelievable, Joe. He does so much for, you know, for disabled kids. He's got his foundation. He's an amazing, amazing man.
He is now on the call. He's working for Westwood One this season. You'll get to hear him on the Raiders-Rams broadcast Monday night, which leads us into a special announcement. We are now the home of Westwood One's coverage of the NFL, which includes the playoffs and the Super Bowl. So if you're looking for national games, right here, 95.7 The Game, we are Westwood One's home. One could make the case that as Westwood One's home, being that tomorrow we will carry the game, that ipso facto, we are the home of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. Drink it in, everyone. Lo, you especially. This is what it sounds like to win a Super Bowl, in case you're ever wondering.
Oh, that hurts.
Well, we were nice in the last hour, and I promised we'd get back to it in this hour.
All right, that's enough. Cut the
tape. Listen to the whole thing. Really drink it in. Because the ending is where they really drive it home.
Dibs, are you going to say anything and just smile?
Dibs is going to do nothing. He's not going to do anything. He's done.
E-A-T-L-E-S, Eagles!
Thank you very much. Brutal. We will be the home of that game tomorrow night. Brutal. Don't hate. Appreciate it.
He won the title. You got to give him his due. For me to come across there and try to salt that would be wrong. Now, his blast at you having never won a Super Bowl, that was wrong, and it was out of line?
It was.
But there's no flag.
Yeah,
there's no flag? Why?
It was a cheap shot, but
cheap
shot. Know,
true so statement, cheap though. Shot, true get, and accurate.
What happens when the cheap shot happens? The official, and you both be the official,
yeah.
You are home, you're a resident official, you throw the flag. If the cheap shot's done, you throw the flag.
Sometimes,
but you chose not to.
Sometimes
keep
the referee,
it in your pocket.
Sometimes the referee locks up in the moment, and then the play goes by, and it's like, you know, I probably should have thrown a flag for that, but we're on to Cincinnati.
We still have time.
It's too late.
No, it was the Washington-Auburn game. Jake Browning got drilled at the end of that game. That should have been 15, but they missed it. Hurt Washington at the end of that game there.
Shout out Folsom High. Jake Browning, one of the great alums.
So, it's unfortunate.
Sac Joaquin section.
But we are the home of Westwood One, and State that chance. Does include tomorrow night's season opener, Atlanta at Philadelphia.
Eagles pregame tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. right here on Joe Lowe and Dibs.
Yeah. We'll get you set starting at 6 a.m.
This is why we rooted for the Patriots, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Drink it in. I will say this. I probably bet Atlanta tomorrow, to be honest with you. The place is going to be rocking, but the Eagles are already a mess. You got the coach fighting with the media over who's going to be the starting quarterback. I have never seen anything like this. Forever, that place has waited for a Super Bowl, and they got it. And they couldn't even get to the next season before they already started going after the head coach. It just goes to show you how it works in that town. It's ludicrous. And they wonder why they don't win with the frequency of
can't
say,
even be
the
happy
Warriors.
With a Super Bowl champ. You can't even get to the opener, a singular game
oh, he's going
without
him.
All the infighting and then the cannibalism.
He's going Philly. Don't let him fool you.
No. I'm telling you right now. It's a no play because I just want to sit down and enjoy the game.
I locked it.
If I have to sit here and prison bet it,
yeah.
I'd take the Falcons.
Really?
If I had to bet the game. Now, I am not betting the game.
Understood.
I'm making that very clear. But if I were to wager on that game, I would wager on Atlanta tomorrow night. I think Atlanta's coming in buttoned up. Atlanta had them last year at the link in that divisional round playoff game, but they had poor play calling inside the red zone, which cost them late in that game and actually throughout that game. I think they're going to come in buttoned up and ready to go. I think the Eagles, you know, you're celebrating, you have a nice offseason, you're going to have a great crowd, but if you don't jump up on them early, I think you're going to have a problem.
That place is going to be rocking them. I'm going to tell you, Jim Schwartz is going to have that defense humming. I don't know how you can go against Philly. I just don't get it, Joe.
Yeah, well, it's not, you know, places you played, like the Chargers, where Raider fans would just come in and take over and help themselves.
I played against Philly. I've been there.
Yeah, they ran you out probably pretty quick. I'm sure if we brought up your lifetime record there, it's probably over.
That's not true.
When did you win there?
We won there. But
oh, yeah, with who?
It doesn't matter. We won there.
It matters.
I've beaten Philly, okay? Now, it's tough to play there. Your fans, I will admit, they get after. And there are some rude fans. Your fans, you guys are rude.
It's debatable.
No, it's not debatable. Everyone talk about Raider fans. Raider fans, they're just tough. I like Raider fans. But your fans, you guys are mean and just ornery. And you guys just yell just so many rude things.
Exhibit A.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not really going to try to defend it because there is no defending it. It is quite abrasive.
They'll make you want to darn near cry. If a kid
was from Lemoore, perhaps. But maybe if you're from Miami Gardens or anywhere else in the country, you might be able to handle a little heckling. I don't know how it is growing up
statement.
On the farm. You're not really dealing with the corn or the wheat screaming at you on a daily basis, so you really can't be raised for something.
Just like a lot that. Of mooing and snorting.
Well, I mean, there you go. There's clucking. My guy waiting for you to jump in.
A lot
right there, Oki.
Okay.
Here it is,
clucking.
Joe. Here I am. I'm back for you, Joe. I got your back.
Root hog or die, buddy.
Yeah.
A lot of... couple of moons. I get it.
Conversation with Kyle Juszczyk coming up in about 7 minutes, which really opens up the floor for anything we'd like to discuss right now. Dealer's Choice. Anyone have anything specific they'd like to get into for the next 7 minutes or so?
We can talk a little bit about Lowe versus Dibs because that actually will kick off tomorrow with the first pick of the first game of the year. So I don't know if you have any idea about not a format change per se, but just how the picks get rolled out, because I know last year there was some shenanigans. There
was some tomfoolery. Lowe was outright cheating for most of the season.
Because he got down big. Lowe won the first year. He was the champ. And then last year I got him with not only a two-piece, but it might have been a three-piece McDibley. And I'll finish and then you'll have your moment. And so after I got you your three or four-piece, Lowe resorted to shenanigans, chicanery, and tomfoolery. And so I was just wondering if we were going to do things differently, because I'll approach it the same way. I actually make my picks before the segment starts, so I didn't know if we were going to do it willy-nilly or if we're going to be a little bit more buttoned up this year.
For those, I'm going to bring everyone in, Anna and Lowe. For those who don't know what Lowe versus Dibs is, it's the last segment of the week, every week during the football season. We play a great open, we play some music. Lowe and Dibs pick every game on the board. No spreads, they pick every game on the board. We keep a running tally, and then at the end of the season, at the end of the Super Bowl, or do we just go regular season
regular
and we do a
season.
Second part?
Yeah.
Okay, we do
yeah.
a minor version of Lowe versus Dibs for the postseason, but the regular season has a wager on it. Now, we'll get to the wager at some point because we'll need to establish that. But for those who don't know, tomorrow will be pick one of Low versus Dips.
So my idea is I think we need to get video of a coin toss every day before the show and post it up on our new Twitter page for the show at Joe Low and Dibs. So that way people can see it. Go follow the page and you can see who wins that day.
So a coin toss,
yes.
And someone would, the winner would get to choose if they want to go second for every pick or
sure.
first for every pick. Is that fair to have? Because if someone wins three coin tosses in a row and
fair.
Then they have the opportunity to go second for every pick. And the reason why this is in hot debate was that last year when Lowe fell behind, he would hand me, and I was complicit in this, he would hand me a sheet and he would say, read the games off in this order and start with Dibs here.
Right.
Dibs would have to pick all the games that were 50-50 so Lowe could tick the other side. And then all the games that were like 14-point spreads, Lowe would be, well, I'm going to take the Patriots.
Right.
And Dibs would agree. He was genius.
And then he would call me a toad for toading along with him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go and take Cleveland against New England.
Right.
Sure, coach.
Well, here's what we can do this year. I think that whoever's behind after week 8, that's when you can turn in your sheet. Is that fair enough? Or you want to say week 10? That it's, you know, if you're trailing, then you say, okay, by week 8 or week 10, if you're down, let's just say, by 7 or more, then that individual can turn in the sheet. Let's do it that way.
So then you can stack the games how you want to stack them.
Right. Let's do it. Yeah, let's do
it
that
ideally, way. Both individuals would just turn in the games to me before the show, and then we would go one by one, and it would just be a radio segment. The problem with that is Dibs makes his picks while we're actually doing the show, so he checks out, and you
that's
don't
true.
Even make picks.
That's
you wait
outrageous.
Until the segment, and it's the first time you even think of it, and you just yell something out. That's literally how it plays out.
I don't check out. I do make my picks during the show, but I never check
There's
out,
There's no way
Joseph.
You're 100% focused while you're making your picks during a segment.
Doesn't mean
and
I'm
you
checked
I'm
out.
Focused, though,
don't even
focused.
Make picks.
I'm focused.
I'll go Cincinnati, Detroit. You'll go, meh, Detroit. And that's the analysis.
He's
that's
going with his gut feeling. That's what it is.
That's why we pin it to the last segment of the week, because we know everyone has officially checked
out by that point. You know, we'll be buttoned up.
No, you won't.
We'll give our picks earlier. How about that?
No, you won't.
A true
friend. There is no way you two get your picks done before the show. That would require responsibility.
Let's do it, Dibs. You're in, I'm in.
No, I'll continue to do them during the show because it allows me to check in. It allows me to get deeper into the content and listen, you know, instinctively and astutely to what Joe's trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yesterday's email was literally, for everyone throwing out their ideas, Dibs' email was just agreeing with everything that had been said. Your email was on a chain from 3 weeks ago. Literally, the only requirement for this show is an email the night before where everyone pitches a couple ideas.
Yeah, but mine, it was still recent. It was what I was thinking about today, and it was some good topics that I had in there, and I just so happened.
They were great. It was just on a previous email chain. The rule is Cody sends it out, and then everyone follows up on it. You routinely pick other email chains to jump in on. Dibs just agrees with what's been said. He gets a bunch of words out there that make it look like he's doing something, but he doesn't
hardcore
actually do
research.
Anything.
I could just cut and
Anna
paste.
Anna finds some nice stuff. Steven finds some nice stuff. Cody just, I don't even know.
It's a cut and paste.
He just goes.
If you're interested
he's
in War and Peace,
yeah.
You'd be interested in his pre-sheet. So no, here's what's going to happen.
What?
There's going to be a lot of words about how Low versus Dibs is going to be different this year. But we're going to get to this Friday.
I want to make it different.
At 9:45, and it's going to be the exact same thing. I'm going to go, who's going first? And you know what's going to happen? You're going to fight and argue over it.
I'll go
then
first.
Then I'm going to go, what's the bet?
I'm going to go first.
Then I'm going to go, what's the bet? And you know what's going to happen? We're not going to be able to agree on anything. And then we'll say we'll do it down the road, and it'll never get done. Does that sound about right?
We already have a bet on the board for this football season.
You do.
That's A. And B.
That's not for this segment, though.
Mm.
No, but that is a bet that's on the board, so it doesn't always fall in the pattern of let's make a bet and we don't make a bet. In fact, I think we've turned a corner to now we're making bets at an alarming rate. Our bets per segment percentage has gone way up since the Labor Day show. Skyrocketed in the BPS.
I think
you had one.
The second bet.
And I'll give you that. It was one.
It was
you're one
bet.
For one.
He's going to do my feet. We got that one. The second bet.
Not going
to
touch
the Browns
catchers,
needs to
Vince.
Get to, what, 6 wins for that, right? Is that what it is? The
yeah,
Browns
correct.
Need to
yep.
get the 6 wins
correct.
For Loda yep. or for Dibs to massage your
yep.
feet.
And then there's we can do the other one that doing a segment as far as the picks. He can rub my back for 5 minutes with
Why
lotion.
Do you want his hands all over you? Why is every bet him putting his hands on you? What happened during
my
that candlelight
night.
Dinner in Vegas?
You don't want to know, Joe. You don't want to know.
That's a good point. Thankfully, it's time to hear from our conversation earlier with 2-time Pro Bowler and former, I don't know why I keep saying former.
Former Bowler.
49ers fullback, Kyle Juszczyk. 49er fullback, two-time Pro Bowler, Kyle Juszczyk, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Kyle, happy game week, and thanks for the time. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm feeling excited. Time to play some real ball.
You know, you get through the preseason, you get yourself into this position, you're going to travel to Minnesota this weekend. What's the mindset coming off the preseason? Is it just, you know what, man, thank God it's done, it's behind us, let's go out, let's get after the Vikings?
And I just feel like you feel good about the work that you've put in, the preparation, and now it's really just excitement. You know, I think with this team especially, we're just really excited to go out there, have our whole squad together, playing meaningful football, and just see where we're at.
Kyle, when you think about where you've come from and the Niners, watching this team grow right before your eyes, you're a veteran, you've been around it. This team's going to go through some ups and downs. You're going to be there, you know, there to right the ship. I love the things that you bring to the table. Is there things that you talk to any of the linebackers when you're playing against other team and say, hey, man, I got to bring out that knife today. I'm going to have to cut you because I see you getting guys down. I'm watching you on the perimeter, watching you mix it up your way, your style of blocking. Do you kind of warn them so then they don't know what you're going to do? Are you going to kiss them in the mouth or are you going to cut their legs out?
Violent. That's funny. That's funny you notice that and you bring that up. Cause,
I watch you, coach. I watch you.
we had the joint practices with Houston, and we step on the field the first day for practice, and right away, their Mike linebacker and Clowney come up to me, you know, because we had played them last season, and one of the very first things they say to me, like, hey, now you can't cut me today in practice. You can't get me like you did last year. And, yeah, definitely, I do like to get in linebackers' heads and, you know, try to mix it up with them. And I can't tell you how many times, like, guys have said something to me about me cutting them in the game. And, you know, I just kind of laugh at them and, you know, maybe I'll tell them, all right, I'll stay up next time. And, of course, I'm just going to cut them again. it's a mental warfare out there. So you got to get in these guys' heads and keep them on their toes.
How much more is the cut block and blocks like that going to be used now because of the new helmet-to-helmet rule, even though most of the calls go against the defense? As an offensive player, particularly blocking, do you have to be mindful of that when you're leading into the hole?
No, to be honest, I'm not very mindful of it. I haven't really thought about it. I try to keep, you know, my head out of it anyways. So that hasn't necessarily been the reason that that I've used it. But I could see how, you know, someone could argue that'd be a reason that they cut more.
Kyle Juszczyk joining us here on 95.7 The Game. A lot of talking heads debate this, but we rarely hear from the players on the issue. How do you and your teammates feel about the idea of shortening the preseason? Is that something players would be receptive to?
You know, just from the guys that I've talked to and just the general feel around the locker room, yes, I do feel like most players would like to shorten that preseason.
Now, conversely, if that came with an 18-game regular season, how do you think players would feel about that, assuming pay would go up commensurate with those two additional games?
Yeah, I mean, that's the assumption that definitely makes a big difference, is are we getting paid for those two extra games? Is there an extra bye week in there? There's a lot of different nuances to it, but I think people are open to the conversation.
Kyle, when you view yourself and you know you're a leader on this team, and I used to tell LT and the guys that I would block for, I said, get on my hip and don't dip. Let's ride. Hey, McKinnon being down, what is your relationship with the tailbacks? How important is you to have them on the same page and get that, you know, that kind of that dancing partner, knowing what you're doing and kind of that thought process? What are some of the things that you tell your running backs to understand you guys are vital to getting that running game going, especially in Minnesota?
Yeah, no, it's definitely important to have a good relationship in the backfield like that. And, you know, we've been a really tight group this whole off season, and to see Jack go down definitely hurt. You know, we are all feeling for him, but yeah, you know, you hear from most teams that it's always next man up. Luckily, you know, Alfred showed up at the right time, and Alfred has fit into the group right away. And really, I mean, we always talk about, like, the running game starts with us, and so we got to set that tone. And as Kyle likes to tell us, we got to shock the defense on that first play. So as soon as you touch that ball and you hit the line of scrimmage, you can't be taking the hit. You got to be delivering it. So that's something that we talk about in our room.
Does this change the role of Jimmy Garoppolo as it pertains to throwing to running backs? Because Jerick McKinnon was going to be a big feature in the passing game as well. Does this maybe provide you more targets, or does this change the passing attack at all?
You know what? It's going to be interesting to see. We're going to get our game plan today, but, you know, guys like Matt Breida and Raheem Mostert and myself, we've all had experience catching the football, so I think all three of us, you know, be able to take over parts of that where Jet was more involved. But we're going to find out here today when I go get this game plan.
49ers fullback Kyle Juszczyk joining us here on 95.7 The Game. How's the first-round pick Mike McGlinchey picking up the offense? He's going to make his first start in a very hostile environment in Minnesota on Sunday. How's everything been going so far for the young guy?
Man, Mike's been a rock star. He's been the ultimate pro. I think it's been huge having Joe Staley with him. Those two are literally best friends. You never see those two apart. But he's just done a great job of embracing his role and just really getting into the playbook, because the guy knows what he's doing out there. I feel like he's performing pretty well. And it's telling that, so we're playing Indianapolis, and, you know, say he does make a mistake, or he did make a mistake, he knew he made a mistake right away. You know, he's talking to himself, come on, Mike, you know better than that. And just for him to be in that position where he, if he does make a mistake, he understands that he did, just knows that he, like, shows that he has knowledge of what he's supposed to be doing out there.
I tell you what, you could always, I should tell my tackles, hey, I got you outside, just don't get beat inside. And if you can get those ribs, when they try to swim over the top, them ribs, I drop guys like that. So look for those rib shots. But real quick, how much has where you came from Baltimore, kind of helped this transition? As far as a guy, you know what Harbaugh brings to the table. Tell me how much what that helped you in doing a transition to San Fran.
Yeah, I definitely think it's helped. Baltimore is definitely known for being a blue-collar team that grinds it out, works their tails off, just, you know, has a good work ethic. And I feel like that's something that I've been able to bring to San Francisco. You know, we got a team full of young guys, and you need people to kind of show them the way and show them what it means to be a pro and what it's like to put that work in every day. So, you know, I do my best to lead by example and take those things that I've learned growing up in, you know, my career in Baltimore, bring it here.
You mentioned you're excited for the season to start. We all are, and it's a tough test at Minnesota, a defense that's as comparable to any that you've faced in the past year or so. How great is the challenge going up against a physical defense in their stadium?
Definitely going to be a good challenge, one that we're going to embrace. But, you know, that's what you need. You need to play against good teams, good defense, to measure where you're at. And really, we go out there and have success against a good defense like this. That's only going to build our confidence and build our momentum going forward.
Two-time Pro Bowler, San Francisco 49ers fullback Kyle Juszczyk with Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Kyle, we know you're busy, so we really appreciate the time. Best of luck this week in Minnesota, and hopefully we can do it again down the road.
Absolutely. Great being on with you guys.
Always a great interview. Thank you so much to Kyle Juszczyk and the 49ers for making that happen. San Francisco finds itself as a touchdown underdog in some spots right now heading into that game in Minnesota. Opened 5.5. Money continues to come in on the Vikings. Probably more so soon when people get into the teaser action as well, teasing that thing from 6 down to even or from 7 down to 1. More on that later. We can explain that at another time, but this is going to be a daunting task to open the season in Minnesota against the Vikings. You want to talk about a front four. Here's a front four for you. Danielle Hunter, Linval Joseph, Sheldon Richardson, Everson Griffin. They are highly compensated and very aggressive along the defensive line.
Yeah, that they are. I tell you right now, they know how to create a new line of scrimmage. And what do I mean by that? They hit you and you're playing on the backside. And when you're doing that, it's tough to get any type of running lanes going. They play with great pad level. They play with hands, their hat in hands. They keep their hands in tight. They shoot those hands in there, and they want to get those linemen off balance and get them going backwards and get them running lateral. And what does that do? That makes it very difficult for that running back to get north and south.
Breaking news from Adam Schefter of ESPN on Twitter. Within the past week, Dallas upped its offer to the Seahawks for Pro Bowl safety Earl Thomas to a second-round pick, according to sources. Seattle wasn't interested. It wants more. Second-round pick for Earl Thomas. Fair, unfair?
I think it's fair. I think it's fair. Earl Thomas, late in his career and clearly disgruntled, so the leverage doesn't necessarily lie with Seattle. It looks like, of all the holdouts, his might last the longest because there's that sense of how many Seahawks are just fed up with what's going on there and the chance for him to potentially go home, and Dallas knows that. I think a second-rounder is fair compensation. Seattle should make a look to do that deal.
It can end so quickly. It can end so quickly. Like in baseball, you can just keep spending money. I mean, there's no one around for the Red Sox that was around at the beginning, right? When they turned the corner at the turn of the millennium and all of a sudden started winning all those World Series. All those guys are gone. But yet you keep firing all that money. You keep acquiring talent. Chris Sale, David Price, Mookie Betts, all that stuff. You just keep working your way down the list. You draft well. You're going to be a juggernaut. In the NFL, it doesn't work like that. You can't just buy success. You can attempt it.
Right.
You can fill out the roster with purchases, but damn, man, it falls apart in a hurry.
You always like to say the best is availability, and is he going to be available? So you think about being available.
No, I think what we established on the show was availability is everything.
Yeah, if availability is everything and you have a guy that plays at this level and he's not going to be available because of injury, you try to trade him because here's the deal. The truth is that your head coach is going to be gone after the year. You're looking at this thing as getting ready to start a rebuild in Seattle. So why the heck would you stay with a guy who after the next year is going to be still disappointed because you didn't pay the guy, you didn't restructure, and it's best to trade a guy like that, get something for him because your best year is behind him and he's not going to play at a high level for you because he doesn't want to be there. I just think that you better trade him, get you a second round pick because Seattle, they're getting ready to start press rebuild.
The Raiders just picked up a whole bunch of picks. They've got issues in the secondary. A second for Earl. It's not like it's going to cost $20 million a year.
Right.
You're off the hook for that deal. Earl Thomas to the Raiders for a second round pick. Who says no?
I don't think either says no. I mean, the Raiders have four first round picks over the next 2 years. So that second becomes somewhat of an asset you can move, and you already, wasted away a third-round pick in Martavis Bryant, so why not roll the dice on a second-round pick?
Hell, give him a first then. You got two of them if you're the Raiders. Get that guy in here if you want him that bad.
Okay, do you think any team in the league is giving up a first for Earl Thomas? That's pretty pricey.
Yeah, you got to look at it like this. If you're looking at a team that can compete right away, if you're looking at the Raiders, does the Raiders feel they're too far away? You just gave away a pass rusher. I get that, but you still got two first round picks. It still would give you three for the next 2 years. If you have that type, maybe you do it. You need a guy. Who's your defensive leader now? Now it's Bruce Irvin. We get that, but bringing a guy in safety that knows how to go ahead and guard people and can help your defense, I like it.
Do the Raiders need a defensive leader? Do the Niners need help at the running back position? The Jerick McKinnon injury and Cam Inman next. Joe Lo and Dibs, your boys, here on 95.7 The Game.
The NFL is back. And it's on 95.7 The Game.
The Vikings! The Vikings have won!
Tomorrow, it's the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles versus the Atlanta Falcons. And you can hear the game right here, starting at 5:30.
They have finally done it! The city of Philadelphia has a Super Bowl champion!
The NFL lives
on
95.7
The Game. Hi, I'm Kristen from Safeway. Your grocery shopping just got easy.
Tonight, the playoffs and the Super Bowl. It's Westwood One's coverage of the NFL, and it's now on the Bay Area's football station, 95.7. The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.